Welcome to Pity Party Over, the podcast for people, teams, and organizations seeking practical ideas for results and greater happiness. I'm your host, Stephen Martini. Let's pause, learn, and move on. Pity Party Over is brought to you by Align, ALYGN.company. Hi everyone, I'm Stephen, and welcome to Pity Party Over. This episode will explore the importance of assumptions, choices, viewpoints, and purpose to formulate a successful strategy. My special guest is Jesse Shea, Clinical Assistant Professor at New York University Stern School of Business. Jesse's research interests include strategy, creativity, digital sociology, and philosophy of education. Jesse teaches both undergraduate and graduate courses, and she's currently pursuing her PhD in the Department of Applied Statistics, Social Sciences, and Humanities at New York University. I am curious to know where you grew up and what were your early experiences that somehow shaped who you are now.
I was born and raised in New Jersey, Parsippany, New Jersey, to be specific. But, you know, where I grew up and who I am and where I'm from is a compilation of what I would say everyone before me. So a little bit about my parents were both born in my dad was born in southern China. My mom was born in northern China. Their families in 1949. They all went to Taiwan. They were both raised in a small city in Taiwan, but it wasn't until they both came to the United States for graduate studies that they met. I might have been born in Morristown, New Jersey, raised in Parsippany, New Jersey, but the history of where I'm from is a confluence of so many chance occurrences that created me.
What would you say that has been the biggest contribution of your parents in the way you think, the way you are?
Strategies is a confluence of choices and chances. So chances, things that you don't have any control over, and choices, those decisions that you make to kind of pivot or to make those moves. My dad he's retired now. He was a biochemical engineer, and that was really not really by choice, but something that he was very good at and that he knew that he could get a scholarship to study here in the United States for. My dad was always very interested in history, and my mom was a very accomplished, she loved to paint in her free time. I come from a family of scientists, but always there was this artistry, humanities, that was a crux of people's interests that they weren't able to pursue. So for me, I think that where I learned to appreciate both scientific mindset and also the artistry and interpretive mindset of artists and putting them together in terms of my teaching as well, which is a science and an art. Talking about strategy and a confluence of choices and chances. Things that you cannot control and things that you can control. One of the most salient memories I have was when my mom died from cancer when I was 17. That was a very, very big learning for me because she was the only person whose opinion really mattered to me when I was growing up. And so having no longer be able to rely on that, I had to really make a lot of decisions for myself. What's important to me? What do I have at hand? What's the environment? And then to make those choices. Because I could not rely on the wisdom, the opinion of this person who mattered so much to me. So that to me is a very formative experience. This person was removed from my life. It actually forced me really rely on my own thinking, my own decision making, my own kind of internal motivator and also internal compass to make those decisions, to own those decisions, and to move forward.
Do you look like your mom?
I look like both my dad and my mom, I think. Yeah.
In 2015, you said you treated strategist equal skeptic of false certainty, citizen of enlightened ignorance. So has that thought changed since?
Skeptic of false certainty, yes. And then also citizen of?
Enlightened ignorance.
That definitely works. No, still holds. I actually don't think that could be mine. I must have been somewhere where I heard that or something. I should have credited that. Or if it's mine, then good work, Jesse. I mean, like, yeah.
I think it sounds like you. Yeah.
Yes, because I think that one of the biggest challenges when people think strategically or when formulating strategy is false certainty. The moment somebody says, like, this is definitely the way we should go, to me, it's kind of like, we're not cynical of that, of the possibility, but the skepticism is really like, okay, why? Are these decisions, is this statement, are these based on assumptions of the past that might not be true to reality and that are basically guiding you to think something that is certain when it's not? The only thing worse than uncertainty is false certainty. That's kind of where I would think strategy really comes in. We're always going to live with uncertain because there are so many things that are out of our control. The only thing worse than living with uncertainty is being falsely certain that you know the right answer, that you know the right course, that you know or assume that what you are doing is either wrong or right. Right. So false certainty is a danger. And enlightened ignorance. I think enlightened ignorance was definitely a phrase that I've heard somewhere before. I'm definitely not as poetic as be able to come up with that. But enlightened ignorance really is constantly being in the state of asking questions, never being falsely certain about what you think is true, what you think is the right course, and being flexible. What's the next thing I want to know? What's the next thing that I can clarify? There's so many things that we don't know. Let me find out what I can know.
It is my understanding that strategy typically involves two major processes. One is formulation, which includes strategic planning and strategic thinking. The second one is implementation, which refers to the action plan taken to achieve the goals. Do you have a similar approach or a different one?
The definition of strategy that I would use is from Eric Vandenstein. His definition of strategy I love is because it kind of encapsulates both. It can go for individuals, it can go for groups, it can go for organizations. So his definition is that strategy is the smallest set of choices to optimally guide or force other choices. I love this. This is about the formulation and also it guides action. As an individual, what's your strategy for this? Sometimes it'd be like, I need to find a new job. I'm going to find a new job, right? That's, in my mind, not a strategy. That's an action, maybe a tactic. That's an implementation of something, right? Perhaps. In terms of a strategy, might be something like, I want to work in a place that utilizes my organizational skills, or something like this that is a decision to formulate that guides. We want to be best in kind in this, or we want to develop innovative strategies. Even just using the word innovation is actually, again, falsely certain. What are those choices you need to make in order to continue? Formulation, that set of choices. Then implementation, what do you need to take action on those choices? A job is something you do to make money. A career is a job you're good at. And a profession is a career you want to get better at. It's about coming up with these constraints. Again, another strategy thinker that has really influenced the way I think, the mindset, but also how I live my life, my work here, is Adam Brandenburger. Adam Brandenburger is a professor here at NYU. And he has this four C's of creativity. What are your constraints? What are your context that you are in? How can you look around to see what you're in and do something opposite and combination? What are those choices that you can actually take something and add it to something else? Because if it's too broad, it's too vague, it's really hard to take action. It's almost inactionable, unimplementable, if you will. It's about that sweet spot, formulating some sort of idea or action, formulating that set of choices, and then using that set of choices to implement. Formulation, implementation are all part of the thinking process and action-taking process this idea of strategy really lends itself to.
One of the things that I used to hear a lot from clients in the past, what is a strategy for the next year, for the next 3 years, for the next 5 years? And somehow this concept has become almost ridiculous in a world that changes all the time. How is a strategic approach changed, in your opinion?
They always think about the strategic plan. I think I heard this from Adam Brandenburger, or he may have quoted somebody else. Foolish is the person who comes into battle or comes into something with a plan. It's not flexible enough. Plan all you want, maybe schedule all you want and have all these goals, but things often don't turn out to where you want them to be. Using time as a strategy is time bound, is like a goal. By year one, this is what I will have done. Those are goals, not necessarily strategies. Strategies are choices, like choices that you're making. The key thing about strategy is these decision nodes. Every little pivot, any one of those things could lead off to totally different timelines, if you will. There's multiple outcomes that could come from any type of decision at any moment that you decide to take another course. If you're a retailer, are we going to be a fully organic, or we only use organic cotton for our garments? That's a strategy because it limits what you will do. The best in kind in providing fully sustainable organic products, that gives you a direction. That guides other decisions that need to be made. That guides then who you're going to get as your suppliers, who are you going to target as your customers, how you might have to price things in the future. Like those are the types of decisions that are going to guide other ones. Is it a plan? Not necessarily. Is it time bound? Not necessarily. Time is a helpful tool to help meet targets or to meet goals and to see if you're on the right track or making progress. But strategy is decidedly not a plan. It's a set of choices that you're making, that you have to decide upon. A set of choices, a set of decisions.
With that said, the notion of choosing is so central in the way you approach a strategy. What are the ingredients to choose well?
I want to say that about you, Stephen. What do you think are the ingredients?
For me, the first thing that I thought about is to be aware of how I look at things. Because everything can be interpreted in so many different ways. You know, what is objectivity? Doesn't exist. So for me to become mindful of how I look at things could be probably one of the most important steps. The other one that I thought about is the multitude of points of view or different ways that something can be looked at, to be mindful there could be other interpretations, other angles that I'm not aware of. When you were talking before, it is about choosing. It's not just about a plan. For me, it's probably the soulfulness of why I do what I do. So if it's a company, you know, maybe it's something that is deeply connected with the vision, missions, and values. Because to get there could be so many different routes, but the soul of the organization, why we do what we do, probably is one of the components that is going to dramatically kick out some of the choices.
Yeah, for sure. I love how you're talking about this choosing well and then also purpose. Why are you doing what you're doing? Simon Sinek, you know, always start with why. Like, because why, if you have that, then the what The what comes from the why, and the how is near infinite. It helps you limit those choice sets. So like, why are you doing what you're doing? In terms of choosing well, I have had many, many jobs, many things I've gotten paid to do. Investment banking, so many different things that I've gotten paid to do. From there, I'm like, well, what is it? What is it that I'm actually good at? I could have chosen. Okay? I probably could be good at it. I haven't really tested. But my last job, for example, you know, working in an investment bank, I was getting paid. I liked what I was doing. I was good at it as a career. But why am I doing this? Like, do I want to get better at this? And that to me was the fundamental kind of purpose question. So now I'm in a profession. I'm teaching is something that I get paid to do, that I believe that I'm good at, and I want to get better at it. Like every day is something I want to get better at. Why is fundamental? Because that's something you can always go back to. It's not necessarily something that you decide on first, but it is something that is foundational. What is essential? What is foundational to your core business, to your organization? Then you go, okay, then you can decide what and how.
Recently, I was talking to a general manager that I worked with in the past. And he said, results are really important, but results alone do not do the trick, especially if you want to have a long-term strategy. So you have to look at results. Those are important indicators that allow me to understand, yes, I'm going the right direction, but there's so much more than that. Managers, executives are so obsessed about results, and rightfully so. But that's not really a strategy, not at all. It just getting by.
For sure. I think results are observation. This is data. They're all data to see, why did you achieve that excellent result? Why did your first quarter earnings outpace your last quarter? The results are one thing. Understanding what it was and why you achieved those results are much more important, because those are the things that last. Organizations are sometimes just making broad sweeping decisions. You must come into the office. You must be in person 3 days a week, 4 days a week, however. So they are actually making decisions that are, how are we going to do our work in person or totally remote? That is a how question. You're going deeper into, as a general manager, is why do I want people to come back in person? Is it because I really want to have more increased a culture of collaboration? Is it because I want to increase those moments of spontaneity and generative ideas that can only be captured in spontaneous interactions? Utilizing the data from when you were in person, when you were on Zoom, what situations led to the reason why you're doing it? Were you able to build collaboration, particularly on Zoom, just like we're doing right now, right? Mm-hmm. We don't need to be in person to be able to have a meeting of the minds. As companies are grappling with how to structure their work and their work time, they're going to these decisions without first deciphering when and how. When do we work best? How do we work best? And what do we want to achieve? Making decisions based off of past decisions so that you can unearth, why did this work well? Results are just indicators of things that work or things that don't work, the extent to what things work, and perhaps observation points for how things might be able to work better in the future.
Executive roles, those people are the ones who are supposed to make strategic decisions. And yet, a good idea may come from anywhere. People that are closest to the issue, most likely, they're going to see what's happening. Based on your experience, how would you say that an organization could transition from a model of having people on top and being the strategic one to having everyone in that conversation?
When you're saying the people on top losing their identity, could you clarify what you mean by that?
I mean the C-suite.
Each organization is going to be different. But I do think, though, that in terms of strategic leadership, in order to generate the best possible ideas, you want to have a lot of observations. In your organization, how can we include all of these ideas so that we can be sure that we are at least having the broadest set, the broadest ideas. Then you amplify those ideas that are generated. In terms of strategic leadership, it is part of their identity to ensure that all the voices are heard, or at least they're generating as many ideas that they can. Then how do we raise that to the power of 10? A lot of times, people who are in those positions of power, they come from the assumption that they have the best ideas. They've gone up the ranks, they assume that they might have. Is that people who are in leadership come from that fault that will never be falsely certain. They've risen up the ranks mostly because they now have experience in seeing all the different, as many perspectives as they can, even from like multiple functions, multiple perspectives, being able to see from different vantage points the organization, then they can operate at the strategic level. A strategist, C-suite, really being able to have this thinking, what are those things that we can move as one? Strategy, hopefully, is really allows multiple functions in an organization, areas of interest in an organization, multiple people to be able to move as one organism at the C-suite level. Their identity is not in the title, but their identity really should be in their experience to see that they can never know it all. And then also to utilize that experience to help marshal and bring an organization to be able to move disparate parts as one organism is strategic leadership, I think.
People have amazing ideas. And actually what they found tremendously frustrating is the fact that oftentimes their voices are not fully heard.
Yeah.
And those are
for sure
missing opportunities for innovation, for creativity, you know, for being more strategic.
Oftentimes, I think that back to the order of operations, real leadership is empowering. That's the exponent. Seeing what you have in these parentheses in your organization, what currently exists, the people, their ideas, each person's experience, and then empowering. That's the exponent. Empowering people who work in your organization to speak their ideas, to feel heard, empowering to give them voice. Giving them voice, oftentimes just asking them, what do you think about this? Give us examples. What is your day-to-day? What do you think would improve this? That is really just empowering them before you go outside, you know, find what other people are doing. Data is quantitative and qualitative. It's not about how much, it's about how. How many ideas do people come up with? How are you empowering people to feel heard, to speak their ideas so that you can ensure that you are gaining the broadest range, broadest variety, and also the deepest? There are many excellent consultants who bring forth the best ideas that their experience from seeing across organizations will lead to the best practices. But each organization has such a depth of knowledge that is all kind of within individual minds. Mm-hmm. How do you empower those, that diversity, that depth of knowledge, those depth of experience, and bring that and empower people to speak their ideas is critical.
All the choices that you made in your life that brought you here, you know, you told me about your mom, your parents. What is the contribution that you hope to give through your work in strategy?
Oh,
that's deep.
I think that's really deep. I think for me, teaching is the closest that I feel that I can experience infinity, because every little minute that I spend with students is just the starting point of a seed that can germinate into infinite different possibilities. What I really hope to contribute is that the students that I interact with, they can see that nothing is a foregone conclusion, that there is no such thing as the right way. There's no such thing as the one way. That if we are thinking about in terms of that, then we are robbing ourselves of that opportunity to experience the possibility and the infinite possibilities of the future. I love teaching. I want to get better at this because it's the closest I've experienced to infinity.
There's a word that I don't think we have said it in this conversation, but I think it could be a synonym of infinity, which is freedom. The notion of strategy for you is so much connected to choosing. You know, for me, choosing is about freedom. Choosing is the biggest freedom that I can possibly have. And so the last question for you is this. When you feel like crap, when you're having like a really difficult moment, for whatever the reason, is there any specific choice or something you do to get out of the funk that somehow you notice works well for you?
The title of this whole podcast, Pity Party Over. I just love that. Okay. I just love it in so many different ways. So for me, I would actually say that translating things to action, something that you can do, is an instantiation of freedom. It's an instantiation of choice. And it's also a way to get out of the pity party, if you will, right? Like it's the funk. For me, I always feel the most free when I think of things in a different way. So I will give an example. I recently turned 40. So leading up to this, a lot of my friends were like, oh, by the time you're 40, we should have this. We should have A, B, and C. We should have, you know, accumulated some sort of thing. And it always seemed like an endpoint. Like 40 just seemed like some sort of endpoint. No, screw this. You know, this is just the beginning. So freedom, to me, is reframing certain situations in a way that makes us feel that we have agency in our life. I want to start a movement. I'm going to call it my FFYFF. It's the start of my 41st year of 41st. For example, my first time having a dirty martini, which I've never had, which I love. My first time eating mutton. My first mammogram that I had. It was also during them. My first time, what else did we do? What else did I did? This is the anti-bucket list. I don't care what everyone else has done. This is my first. My first time seeing my friend's new daughter. My first time doing a 2,000-piece puzzle. It's a movement to reframe how we're seeing things that are expected to be the end or the mark of an end of something. And really, it's a part of a first of a new beginning. What can I see differently? Instead of thinking things are coming to the end or things that I'm losing out or things that I don't have, constantly going with that mindset. What are the things that you are doing for the first time, you are thinking for the first time, that you are feeling for the first time, those firsts? Pity party over. How do I get out of the funk? Freedom is reframing. It's a mindset to look at what currently exists in a new or different way that puts your own stamp on it. This decade, my mom was diagnosed with cancer when she was 45, and she died when she was 50. All of us, if there's anything we learned from the pandemic, is that there is no certainty about what's going to happen in the next moment. For me, switching that from like, oh gosh, you know, what am I going to do, to like, okay, what is it that I can do right now? What is it that's new for me right now? What is all those things that I want right now? There's no such thing as a plan. If you come to life with a plan, you're going to be sorely disappointed.
Miss Jessie, you are a precious gift.
Oh, Steven.
Thank you for doing this with me. We should do this again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Pity Party Over. In the episode, Jessie points out strategy as a confluence of choices and chances, things you can control and things you cannot control. A good strategy questions all certainties and assumptions with a curious, open, and flexible attitude. Strategy is not a rigid plan based on dangerous false assumptions, but the smallest set of choices that optimally guide or force other choices. Understanding the context of those choices is also critical. For individuals, teams, and organizations, choosing well requires awareness of why we do what we do, Purpose drives results, and results tell us how things might be able to work better in the future. The best strategic ideas require leveraging different points of view by listening to your people and giving them a voice. Strategy is about choosing, and choosing is the freedom to reframe challenges to make us feel we have agency in our personal and professional lives. If you are interested in developing your strategic thinking, you can contact me via email, LinkedIn, or Twitter, or sign up for a 60-minute complimentary live session. Please check the episode's notes for information. If you enjoy this content, please subscribe to the PD Party Over podcast, available on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and many podcast platforms and apps. I invite you to browse our leadership and managerial development programs at align.company. Align is spelled ALYGN.company. Be happy, be well, and until we connect again, thank you for listening.